Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1906 with a release date of February 21st, 2014 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. A ham in the United Kingdom hears China's lunar rover. The public is invited to comment on FCC process reform. Canadian hams get permanent access to a very low frequency band. Hams in Bulgaria get three new bands. South Africa hams told that they must comply with a 12.5 kHz spacing for 2-meter repeaters. Two teens bring a dormant AMSAT net back to life and a trip back in time and space to the beginnings of the universe. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1906, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
China's Jade Rabbit lunar rover is not dead after all. This after its signal was heard and confirmed by a United Kingdom amateur radio operator. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the latest information.
The Jade Rabbit rover was launched as part of China's Chang-3 mission to the moon last December 1st. On December 14th, the Chang-3 landed on the moon with its first signals copied at UHF SATCOM around 1718 UTC the same day. The Jade Rabbit lunar rover was then deployed with its transmitter activated and signals detected on 8462.080 MHz running in the low-rate BPSK mode. The rover functioned well until the lunar nighttime set in. The mission's command control center was expecting the rover to contact Earth on February 12th after it had endured its second lunar night. Since it did not transmit any signals, the rover was officially declared permanently inoperative. But on the same day, a signal from the Jade Rabbit was heard by a ham radio operator in the United Kingdom. Paul Marsh, G7EYT, who also holds the call M0EYT, reported detecting the rover on 8462.078 MHz. This has brought new hope to China's command control personnel that the overall mission just might be saved. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
Needless to say, that's quite an accomplishment for ham radio, especially after those in command of the project seem to think that all might be lost. The complete story of how the Jade Rabbit was found amongst the spectral pictures of the Chang mission is at the website found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. The Federal Communications Commission is inviting comment on what it terms as its process reform. Amongst the agency's goals is eliminating or streamlining outdated rules that are candidates for such an action. This as a result of marketplace or technology changes that render them no longer necessary in the public interest. Interested parties may file comments on the report and the proposed recommendations on or before March 31, 2014. All comments should reference GN docket number 14-25. Comments may be electronically filed using the Internet by accessing the agency's electronic comment filing system at apps.fcc.gov/ECFS. The entire notice can be read online at tinyurl.com/FCC rules-reform. Industry Canada approved access by Canadian radio amateurs to the low-frequency band from 135.7 to 137.8 kHz, subject to certain conditions put in place in late 2009. This includes a maximum emission bandwidth of only 100 Hz, as well as a maximum effective radiated power level not to exceed 1 watt. Also, as this is a shared allocation, which Canadian hams may not cause interference to the primary users of this spectrum, including stations in other nations that operate radio navigation services. In addition, a permanent access to 135.7 to 137.8 kHz is a direct result of Canada implementing changes from the 2007 World Radio Communications Conference, which added amateur radio use of this spectrum on a secondary basis. This has now been included in the newly updated Canadian RBR-4 standards for the operations of stations in that nation's amateur service. Several new and one expanded amateur band have been introduced to ham radio in Bulgaria. In the near future, LZ prefix amateurs will be able to use the bands from 472 to 479 kHz, 5.250 to 5.450 MHz, and 70.0 to 70.5 MHz. In addition, the 160-meter band will be extended up to 2 MHz. Now, all those new and increased allocations are on a secondary, non-interfering basis with the primary users of these spectrum parcels. South Africa's telecommunications regulator, ICASA, has confirmed that all 2-meter amateur radio repeaters must comply to the 12.5 kHz channel spacing. This during a recent meeting between the South African Radio League and that regulatory body. While most South African repeaters operating in the 2-meter band do comply with the 12.5 kHz spacing there, however, there are few repeaters that still use the older 25 kHz inter-system spacing. The South African Radio League and IASA will meet again during March for a workshop to address repeater frequency coordination and other operational issues. From Tasmania comes word of a rather messy rubbish search to locate an errant signal from a discarded older-style emergency locator beacon. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, has the details.
Police in northern Tasmania had to use a rescue helicopter to locate an errantly discarded emergency position indicating radio beacon, or EPIRB. Then a ground crew had to dig through a rubbish dump to locate the unit and manually disable it. Personal radio beacons such as this are a safety measure used by people mostly while at sea or travelling in remote areas. According to Jim Linton, VK3PC, who passed along the story, these older-style beacons need to be disposed of properly. That means a minimum removing the battery before casting them aside. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, in Nelson, New Zealand.
As of February 2010, analog beacons on 121.5 are not monitored by satellite, and only 406 MHz EPIRB signals are now being listened for. Back here in the United States, the report validates the benefits of using the Radio Broadcast Data System, or RBDS, to deliver alerts to individuals during emergencies. Now, Congress wanted the Federal Emergency Management Agency to study how RBDS could be used with its integrated public alert and warning system. FEMA now says to improve the speed and penetration of federal, state, and local emergency alerts and warnings, the agency is evaluating RBDS to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the alerting distribution infrastructure. One of the upshots that could potentially be seen because of this report is finding more cellular telephones to be equipped for FM broadcast reception so that they can act as RBDS receivers as well. More is on the Internet at the site found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. In DX Upfront, the on-the-air portion of the Amsterdam Island FT5ZMD expedition has come to an end, although the job of sending out QSL cards remains. During its stay, the de-expedition team logged on the order of 170,000 contacts on single sideband, CW, and RDI. Amsterdam Island has been on the seventh most sought-after DXCC entity, according to the Club Log Most Wanted list. DX World Net is reporting that 3Z9DX is planning to operate stroke S0 from the Western Sahara Territory for 1 week, only sometime in mid-March. The exact dates are not yet to be determined, but his activity will be on 40 through 10 meters, using single sideband only. You can QSL this one via 3Z9DX. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KJ3LR repeater on 145.110 MHz, serving Bradenton, Florida. A tower accident has seriously injured an Idaho ham. Amateur Radio Newsline's KK6ITB is here with the details of what happened.
Robert Galindo, KE7ADT of Athol, Idaho, was critically injured when the winching cable snapped while he was working on his 40-foot crank-up tower, resulting in the loss of his right hand and several fingers on his left hand. The 52-year-old Galindo, who goes by the name of Bearpaw, was trapped and left hanging 20 feet up in the air when rescue crews arrived at his home. The accident was witnessed by his wife, Gail Perry, KE7ADN, who called for the emergency assistance. Multiple agencies responded to her 911 call, with help arriving in under a half hour. Timberlake Fire Protection District officials say that it took rescuers another 20 minutes to raise the upper tower sections and to extricate Galindo. KE7ADT was then transported by a life flight helicopter to the Kootenai Health Center in the city of Coeur d'Alene. There he underwent more than 4 hours of surgery, and at last report we have was that he was listed in critical condition following the operation. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, reporting.
More on this story as information is made available. The FCC has issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $7,000 to James R. Winstead. He's KD5OZY of Coleman, Texas. This for his alleged violation of Section 97.101 Delta of the Commission's rules by operating a radio transmitter to interfere with the communications of other licensees. This past January 21st, in response to several complaints of intentional interference from amateur licensees operating on 7.195 MHz, an agent of the Enforcement Bureau's Dallas office used mobile direction finding equipment to positively identify the source of transmissions to the address of record for Mr. Winstead's amateur radio station. The agent monitored the transmissions for approximately 30 minutes. Now, during that time, he heard a replay multiple times of short sentences or conversations that had just been transmitted and someone occasionally speak the word George. The FCC alleges that it was Winstead who replayed recorded conversations so frequently that other licensees were unable to complete their conversations. The agent then identified himself to Mr. Winstead and requested to inspect the radio station located on the premises. The agent soon noted that Mr. Winstead's amateur radio station was tuned to the frequency of 7.195 MHz. During the inspection, Mr. Winstead showed the agent how he recorded and retransmitted other amateur licensees' communications. He also admitted that he intentionally interfered with amateur communications on 7.195 MHz and had an ongoing disagreement with another amateur licensee named George. Now, in its February the 19th decision to propose the $7,000 fine, the FCC says that the evidence in the case is sufficient to establish that Mr. Winstead violated Section 333 of both the Communications Act and Section 97.101 Delta of the rules. Section 333 of the Communications Act prohibits any person from willfully or maliciously interfering with or causing interference to any other radio communications of any licensed station. Meanwhile, Section 97.101D of the FCC rules states that no amateur operator shall willfully or maliciously interfere with or cause interference to any radio communications or signal. Winstead was given the customary 30 days to pay the proposed fine or file an appeal. A proposed $44,000 fine issued against legendary Chicago broadcast station WLS-AM has now progressed to a forfeiture order. Amateur Radio Newsline's Hal Rogers, KHCMD, reports.
The case began in 2009 when the Enforcement Bureau received a complaint that the station aired a program on behalf of the Workers' Independent News without making it clear that the program was an ad rather than a news story. In its response, WLS told the commission that it aired several ads of various lengths, promotional items, a pair of two-hour programs, and an additional half-hour program on behalf of the group. The station claimed that all of the ads referenced Workers' Independent News and identified the narrator, but admitted that it did not specifically state that the program material was sponsored, paid for, and provided by the group. WLS asked that the proposed fine be reduced to $4,000. It asserted that the FCC mechanically applied the base fine to the 11 times the ads aired, which raised the fine to the $44,000 level. The station also blamed the incident on inadvertent employee error, which the company says has now been corrected. But in denying the request, the FCC noted that it has the authority to fine a licensee up to $37,500 for each violation of the sponsor ID rules or for each day the violation occurs, up to a maximum of $375,000. It went on to say that it can find no legal basis on which to reduce the amount, noting that inadvertent employee errors are not justification. As such, the FCC said the proposed amount stands, and the Commission directed WLS to pay within 15 days of the date that it issued its decision. I'm Hal Rogers, K8CMD.
At airtime, it's not known if WLS plans any future appeals. Two Los Angeles, California television stations are going to explore channel sharing with the support of the major wireless lobby. This after the Wireless Association, along with stations KLCS and KJLA, announce a channel sharing pilot project that responds to the Federal Communications Commission's request to demonstrate the technical and legal arrangements necessary to implement a successful channel sharing operation. Once the two broadcast stations receive FCC approval, the testing will take place throughout the remainder of the first quarter of 2014. Under the channel sharing agreement, KLCS and KJLA will conduct a series of tests that'll culminate in KLCS hosting KJLA's content and transmitting a shared stream that will combine the two stations' primary and multicast content. KLCS and KJLA will also attempt a variety of high-definition as well as standard-definition video feeds to confirm the feasibility and technical limits of channel sharing between two unaffiliated broadcasters. There will be no impact to KJLA's and KLCS's viewers during this test. Turning to upcoming ham radio events, word that the Orange County, New York Amateur Radio Club will hold its Spring 2014 Ham Fest Sunday, April 27th from 8 till 2 in the afternoon. The venue this year is the Wallkill Community Center in the city of Madison. Free parking will be available. For more information, please contact Tom Ray by email to w2trr@ocarc-ny.com. Or check the club's website at tinyurl.com/OCARC-HamFest. The Radio Club of America will hold its membership breakfast on March the 27th. This in conjunction with the 2014 International Wireless Communications Expo show in Las Vegas, Nevada. The featured speaker will be retired New York City educator Carol Perry, WP2MGP. The get-together will also see the presentation of the IWCE Scholarship to 2013 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year, Padraig Lysandro, KC9UUS. The venue for the Radio Club of America 2014 membership breakfast is the Las Vegas Hilton in ballrooms E and F. Pre-registration information in the PDF format is on the web at tinyurl.com/RCA-member-breakfast2014. Some names in the news. First up is FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler, who will provide the regulatory agency's keynote talk at the 2014 National Association of Broadcasters Convention, and the NAB says that Wheeler's address will take place on Tuesday, April the 8th, from 9 till 10 a.m. At that time, he's expected to provide insight into his views on broadcasting and what his expectations are on the regulatory front in the coming years. Bill Boskwick, VE4BOZ, has accepted the position of Radio Amateurs of Canada Deputy Director for the Midwest Region. Now living in Elm Creek, Manitoba, and officially retired, Boskwick previously served as the District Officer for the Northeast Alberta Province with the Alberta Emergency Management Agency. He also served 32 years in military service with Canadian Forces as the Communications Electronics Engineering Officer and former Deputy Commander of the Signals Regiment in Winnipeg. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Pirate FM transmitters have hit the airwaves in pockets across Syria. WIA newsman VK4LAW has more.
Radio Watan is but one of more than a dozen opposition radio stations that have sprung up since the start of the revolt against the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad. The stations are run by young civilian activists who played an important role early in the uprising but have since been targeted by government forces for airing music and women's voices. The opposition radio stations are the most recent arrival on Syria's combative news media scene, where parties on both sides try to shape perceptions of a conflict that is conducted largely out of the public eye because the violence and government restrictions severely limit journalistic access. It is much cheaper than TV and more accessible to the public because the listener doesn't have to have electricity to listen to you, said Obai Sikar, the director of Radio Al Kool. Just a small radio with two batteries and you're on. With international news, I'm Jason, VK2LAW.
The unlicensed radio outlets range from small operations with a single transmitter that covers one town to complete networks that broadcast into different Syrian provinces. The Cape 2 ham radio satellite is now known as the University of Louisiana Oscar 75, or LO-75. This according to Oscar number administrator Bill Tynan, W3XO, who recently informed AMSAT mentor Nick Pugh, K5QXJ, of the decision. The Cape 2 ham satellite operates on 145.825 FM with a CW beacon signing the call W5UL. The bird also includes a digipeater, text-to-speech operation, a simplex repeater, email, and tweet functions. The ground station software can be downloaded at www.ulcape.org. A pair of young hams in Colorado have brought that state's dormant AMSAT net back to life, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Amanda Alden, K1DDN.
15-year-old Skylar Fennell, KD0WHB, and Jordan Walters, KD0NLV, have reestablished the Colorado AMSAT net. The purpose of this net is to discuss anything related to satellites. Topics include informative bulletins on active satellites, as well as when they will be passing over the area. After hearing their enthusiasm on the Colorado Astronomy Net, its control station, Bernice Ansel, KI0AR, encouraged the two teens to pick up the AMSAT Net's operation. And while the AMSAT Net is only a few weeks old, its popularity is already growing. In fact, internet listeners have been tuning in from as far as Florida. One of the ongoing topics has been if net members have ever made contact through a satellite, and if so, what antenna was used. The net operations also stands by at times so that members can go outside and view the International Space Station passing overhead. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Amanda Alden, K1DDN, in Canyon City, Colorado.
The Colorado AMSAT Net takes place every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. local mountain time. If you'd like to listen or to check in, connect to All-Star Node 29298 or 29436. Operation here in Cannon City, Colorado is via the Rocky Mountain Radio League repeater on 146.940 MHz. Hams in the United States are reminded that there's a new process for amateur radio on the International Space Station's school contact proposals. For U.S. schools to have an ARISS contact, they must fill out a proposal, submit it to NASA, and see if the school is selected. If so, it'll be placed into a future contacts list, and a mentor will be assigned to assist the school in planning for the event. More information, contact the NASA Teaching from Space Education Office by email to jsc-tfs-ariss@mail.nasa.gov. If you missed that kind of long address, you can find it in the print edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. On the air, listen out for Slovak Republic station OM44LTE to be on the air on all of the ham bands until December the 31st. The special event call sign is being used to celebrate the allocation of frequencies for the long-term evolution or LTE communications at 800 MHz, 1800 MHz, and 2600 MHz in that nation. The station operator is ONM3TOW, who is spokesman of the nation's regulatory authority for electronic communications and postal services. Electronic QSLing via EQSL is preferred, but for those who require a paper QSL, you can obtain one by sending theirs with a self-addressed envelope and sufficient return postage to OM3RP, who is the QSL manager for this operation. A group of Northern Ireland radio amateurs have introduced a new award for hams who want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day on the air. While the details are still a little bit sketchy, the organizers hope this to be an annual event every March the 17th. Those who want to participate as an award station or want more information on the event should go to stpatrickaward.webs.com on the World Wide Web. In DX comes word that JA1IST will be on the air stroke FK from New Caledonia between February the 25th and March the 1st. His activity will be holiday style on the high-frequency bands. You can QSL to his home call sign or via the Bureau. F5MNW will once again be operational stroke FR from St. Lieu between March the 16th and April the 8th. Activity will be on the HF bands using only CW. QSL via his home call sign, either direct or via the Bureau. F6ARC will be active stroke FG from Guadalupe between March the 11th to the 23rd. Activity will be holiday style and will focus on the 30, 17, and 12-meter bands, with the lower bands using 100 watts and operating Morse only. QSL via FE11IDX, either direct or via the Bureau. ZL3TE will be operational as 3 Delta 2 Sierra Echo from Viti Levu Island between April the 11th through the 14th. His main activity will be in the Japan International DXCW contest on April the 12th and the 13th. Operations outside the contest will be mainly on CW with some digital modes, and you can QSL to ZL3TE or electronically via Logbook of the World. G0VJG will be active stroke J6 from St. Lucia between June the 5th and the 18th. Operation is likely to be on 40 through 10 meters using sideband only. If you make contact, please QSL via G4DFI. And lastly, several sources are reporting that a multinational team will be on a de-expedition to Malawi as 7Q7Q sometime in late November. This will include an entry in the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest. As of airtime, this operation seems to be headed up by ZS6RJ and will be the same group that was active as 3DA0ET last year. Look for more details to be forthcoming in future newscasts. And finally this week, it can best be called a trip back home in time to the beginnings of the universe. And it's been taken by researchers down under. WIA News anchor Graham Kemp, VK4BB, has the details.
A team led by astronomers from the Australian National University has discovered the oldest known star in the universe, which was formed shortly after the Big Bang 13.7 billion years ago. It's now been confirmed using the Magellan Telescope in Chile. The composition of the newly discovered star shows it formed in the wake of a star which had a mass 60 times that of our Sun. The discovery has allowed astronomers for the first time to study the chemistry of the first stars, giving scientists a clearer idea of what the universe was like in its infancy. The star was discovered using the ANU SkyMapper telescope at the Siding Spring Observatory, which is searching for ancient stars as it conducts a 5-year project to produce the first digital map of the southern sky.
Once completed, the project should give a clearer understanding of the origin of the universe and the stars that we on Earth see every night, at least those seen in the Southern Hemisphere. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights are reserved.